Call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee meeting to order. Welcome, everyone. We have one bill on our agenda today, Senate Bill 199. Open a public hearing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 199 is a proposal that the committee, I think most members of the committee are familiar with. It's a what it does is increase the cap for the Oregon Affordable Housing Lenders Credit Program. It increases the cap from $17 million to $21 million per fiscal year beginning with tax years 2010. It's a corporate credit, so those years can be staggered. As you recall, in the February session, the committee did, through House Bill 3619, did increase the cap from $13 to $17 million beginning with the 09 tax year because of some modifications in the program and some potential matching with federal dollars. I've also given the members tax expenditure report description of the program, and you can see that's where the estimated dollars are. It's for 09-11, about $20.6 million. These credits do have substantial carry forwards, so when they're issued to lenders, it can be some time before they're actually taken on returns. And of course, the profitability of those that have the credits influences that timing as well, because the credits aren't used obviously when there's not net taxable income. You also notice in the tax expenditure report, one thing that was kind of interesting after our discussion yesterday is you notice the purpose. It says a statute that allows this expenditure does not explicitly state a purpose. So this is one of the issues we talked about yesterday in terms of the tax expenditure report. But the evaluation there was prepared by the Housing and Community Services Department, which they have a fair amount of data, and we did have a good discussion on that data in February. So they are here to update you on this bill.
Great. We have four people signed up, and I don't know if you've worked out who wants to come up with whom. We've got two chairs here. We can get two more, or you can come up two and two. Rick Krager, Bill Van Vliet, Jim Warfield, and Janet Byrd. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Rick Krager. I'm the Deputy Director of Oregon Housing Community Services, and with me is Bill Van Vliet. He's the Executive Director for the Network of Oregon Affordable Housing. First, let me say thank you again for allowing us to come and testify before you on Senate Bill 199. This committee has always been very supportive of the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit and the efforts that we've tried to put forth in preserving affordable housing across the state. We have passed out for you a little presentation document that says Senate Bill 199, Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit. And Bill and I are going to do a joint presentation here together, and I'm going to do the first half, and he's going to cover the second. So in terms of first page, just a little bit of overview. One thing regarding the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit, this has been a very, very important tool for the agency over the years. It was put forth in 1989 is when it was the inception of the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit. And since that time, we've been able to do 290 loans that have essentially created 10,000 units of affordable housing. So it's a very, very important tool for us, and that's been a variety of different types of housing. It's been anything from senior elderly housing to family workforce housing, housing for disabled individuals. So we've done a variety of different projects over the years, and it's been very, very, very helpful. In this bill, Senate Bill 199, we're proposing to increase the current cap, which is at $17 million, to $21. And with that, it will create essentially $100 million of loan funds, very low interest rate loan funds. And Bill's going to talk a little bit about how that is generated here shortly. But it's going to create $100 million for us for affordable housing. Now, one of the things that we have very much focused on, and I think this committee is very familiar with, is related to the preservation of federally subsidized housing projects. I think as we've discussed with the committee before, these are projects that were financed in the early 80s with federal rent contracts. They are beginning to expire now. Those contracts are going away. So we are trying to make every effort possible to preserve those, get them in ownership or new ownership, and be able to preserve that federal contract for another the 20 to 30 years. And this tool, the OHTC, has been very, very effective in doing that. So turning to page 3, just a quick recap of some of the legislative actions, and I think Paul went through a few, but turning back to 2007, we were fortunate enough to get a $2 million increase in the OHTC. And then there was another important piece to this, is there was an exemption allowed for the OHTC on rental savings pass-throughs, specifically for federal subsidized housing projects and manufactured dwelling parks. And again, Bill will talk about this shortly, but essentially, the interest savings that you have on these loans are passed directly through rent reductions for the tenants. There was an exemption made for that as it relates to federally subsidized housing projects and manufactured dwelling parks, and that's because those rents are already very much subsidized and very, very low interest rates. So, rents. One other important piece to note about 2007 is that we were provided with $8.1 million through the agency's budget for the efforts around preservation of Section 8 housing. Again, we've been able to take that money along with OHTC to put together a preservation strategy for this biennium. Also, in the 2008 special session, I think this is what Paul was alluding to, there was a $4 million increase, and again, the real focus on that particular increase was related to these federally subsidized housing projects. And also, another important investment by the legislature in 2008 was a $1 million general fund appropriation for an interim pool of financing that would enable us to preserve those projects that might not be ready for full financing, but to at least save them in the interim so that we could come back and permanently finance them for the long term. And Bill's also going to talk a little bit about the status of that and some of the success that we've seen. Turning to page 4, I wanted to talk a little bit about results, what we've been able to accomplish. In calendar year 2008, we've been able to use $1.9 million of the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credits to preserve 786 units of federally subsidized housing. And what we estimate that to bring is about $56.6 million of federal subsidies that will stay in the state for the next 20 years. And again, we've talked about this before, is that if these projects, you have this one time to save these projects, if you don't save them, that federal money is gone. It's lost because it's been targeted specifically for those projects. So we have been successful with those units in keeping $56.6 million in the state. I think another important note, and again, that we've talked to the committee before in the past, is that if we don't preserve this property, these are the very lowest income people. You're going to have to find a new place for them to live, and there's going to be a need for other affordable housing. Right now, if you look at the cost for developing new housing, it's much, much more than preserving the existing stock of housing. So we project of those 786 units, it would have cost $157.2 million to replace the units. One other thing I wanted to mention, the 786 units have been preserved, but then in addition, we have 364 units already in the pipeline now with another $1.1 million of OHTC commitments. These are currently in underwriting, so they're going through the process of getting everything put together so that we can close the loan and move to permanent financing. And then one last thing, and again, I'll let Bill talk about this as it relates to the results, is in calendar year 2008 and also here in the beginning of 2009, we've been able to, through the Oregon Housing Acquisition Fund, do interim financing for 247 units. So that $1 million investment was made, has gone to work. It's leveraged a variety of other dollars, and we've already been able to see success in doing some interim financing for those units. Moving on to page 5, talk a little bit about the benefits as it relates to the tax credit. And what I'm going to do is provide you the benefit that the OHTC brings, but then apply that to those 786 units that we were able to do in 2008. So for every dollar of tax credit cap that's increased, we're able to leverage $25 in low interest rate financing. So for that $1.9 million in 2008 in OHTC, we've leveraged $46.4 million in loans. Those are loans that were created for the purposes of affordable housing. And then another piece that we're really trying to emphasize more and more is housing as an economic stimulus. And I think you all have a copy. Whoops, this is upside down. All have a copy of this housing as an economic stimulus booklet has come around. And we have, over the years, really tried to show the economic benefits of doing affordable housing and the benefit that it creates. And so through our studies, we've been able to find for every dollar invested in affordable housing, there is a created $11 economic benefit. So again, applying that $46.4 million that was leveraged in 2008, we estimate, based on, again, our case studies, $510 million of economic benefit that's brought to the state of Oregon. The next piece, on the third bullet here is, and again, something we've already talked about, is the $1.9 million has essentially kept federal money in the state. And using those 786 units, $157.2 million of federal money is going to be maintained here in the state for the next, I jumped to the fourth bullet. That was actually for the federal subsidy. That's $56.6 million in federal subsidy. The other portion is related to housing replacement costs, and that's the 157.2 that we avoided by having to replace those units. So moving to page six, I'd just like to give you a little calculation. Again, this is based on the case study that we just went through, the 786 units. And these are all the numbers that I just quoted you in terms of leverage, replacement costs, federal subsidies retained, economic stimulus. We estimate the total benefits of this investment at $770.6 million. Now, what does it cost the state? If you look at the OHTC, it's a $1.9 million credit given today that will be over the next 20 years. That will amortize down over the 20 years as the loan value goes down. And we estimate that cost to be $29 million, again, over the course of the 20 years. In addition, with all projects, we need to be able to put gap financing. That's what the $8 million was used for this last biennium. We also have in our next in this current budget, a proposed $16 million of gap financing. But all when you total all together, $33.5 million is what the cost was that the state, we estimate the state expending. That creates a net benefit of 737.1. We think this is a great investment. Again, you know, not only the social benefits that it brings, it's maintaining people, keeping people in their housing, keeping rents low, but there is also the economic benefit to this as well, and we'd like to be able to point that out. So for Senate Bill 199, in terms of on page 7, the requests that we're making, as we look forward, we see about 3,477 units that are out there in the next 2 years that are going to be expiring. These are the federal expiring projects. We believe that we're going to need about another $4.0 million to be able to work towards preserving those. The governor's budget, as I already mentioned, has $16.1 million in it of lottery-backed bonds that would provide gap financing for these purposes. Again, just applying some of the other specifics of those units that we see here in the next 2 years, the replacement value of those would be $695 million. The federal subsidies we project that they would save is about $219 million. The last point I'll make before I turn it over to Bill, one of the key things about the OHTC is that when a credit is awarded, there isn't that immediate revenue impact. Typically, it takes anywhere between 6 to 24 months for that actual loan to close, so the credit wouldn't be taken until that loan actually closes. So we don't anticipate there would be immediate impacts to that. In addition, and I think has already been said, that there is the ability for the credit to be carried forward by the banks. In the case that there is no liability for a bank, if there is no profit, then that credit could be taken up to 5 years in terms of a carry forward. So we just wanted to point out that we don't see this as an immediate impact, but it would be something that we'd see over time. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bill, and he's going to talk to you a little bit more about the details of the OHTC.
Okay, thank you. And our committee staff has requested that you remember not to sit too close to the mic because our sound system is actually pretty sensitive, and also cell phones should be turned off because they interfere as well. So, with that announcement, I don't usually say about the cell phones because I tend to be an offender. So go ahead, Bill.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Members of the committee, my name is Bill Van Vliet, and I'm the Executive Director of NOAA, the Network for Oregon Affordable Housing. We're a nonprofit consortium of banks from around the state of Oregon that provides financing for affordable housing developments all over the state. We have about $150 to $160 million of capital available to us, mostly from our member banks, but also from some other resources recently as well. I'm going to talk briefly about how the OHTC works. Almost all of the loans in our portfolio that we make use the OHTC, so we're one of the larger utilizers of the program statewide. And essentially, the OHTC allows banks to reduce their interest rate by up to 4% and claim a state income tax credit equal to the lost revenue caused by that lower rate. The property owners who receive this lower interest rate have to agree to pass 100% of that savings, of that interest rate savings, through in the form of lower rents that benefit the tenants. The one exception to the pass-through rule is, actually there's two exceptions. One is for preservation projects that Rick talked about because of the Section 8 vouchers that go with those projects. The pass-through was requirement was eliminated. And really what this does is it allows private funders then to provide even a greater amount of the financing and minimize than public subsidies that are required to fill gaps that Rick just talked about with the, for instance, the $8 million from the last session. The other exception is with manufactured home parks. Again, the pass-through requirement was not required for those projects when we finance park acquisitions. So I wanted to walk through a real quick example of how these work. I won't dwell on this too long because I know you've seen this before. But essentially, you know, a bank that would normally make a loan at maybe 7.5% would be able to make that same loan for 3.5% instead. And so on the example, you can see the loan amounts are the same. The interest rates are different by 4 percentage points. And then the corresponding debt service, the loan payments, are considerably smaller for the project that has the OHTC. This, in turn, allows the owner to charge the lower rents, which you can see further up on the page, and you get considerable rent savings for the tenant. And it's a very powerful tool that allows us to essentially reach a much lower income population with our projects for the same amount of private sector bank capital than we would otherwise be able to provide. The next page demonstrates sort of the opposite calculation, and that is if we didn't have that credit available to us and we wanted to reach the same population, how much more money, how much more public money would it take to build that project? And in this case, you can see the rate differential with the same lower rents. We end up with a capital requirement of $340,000 just in this particular example. So you can see it's a considerable amount of money that this program essentially saves the state from having to come up with on the capital side. We're able to use the private sector capital instead with this credit. So who benefits from this? Really, it's low-income renters. They are the beneficiaries. This program is a very strong program, and it's a powerful tool. And to me, one of the key strengths is 100% of the credit goes to the benefit of the tenant. It doesn't go to the bank, and it doesn't go to the owner. All of it passes through to the tenant. The OHTC leverages the bank and the private investment into communities that might not otherwise see such investments. Truthfully, without this program, a number of projects simply would not be built because they wouldn't be economically feasible around the state. It's a very efficient program. There's very little overhead. Most of the overhead is actually carried by the lenders who do the calculations and supply that information up to the state and they compare that to their compliance checks as well. The credits aren't discounted and sold like a lot of tax credits are, so you don't lose money off the top. So all of the credit goes to support the legislature's policy goals and strengthens our communities. The projects do deliver the economic stimulus effect that Rick talked about. They provide lasting economic benefits to our communities by providing local vendors and suppliers opportunities to service these projects, such as landscaping, repairs and maintenance, flooring vendors, and whatnot. And most importantly, the OHTC frees up our tenants' incomes to pay for health care, food, other essentials that they need just to survive. So it's a very important program that delivers a number of benefits throughout the system. So because of these strengths, the OHTC is really anticipated to play a key role going forward, as Rick alluded to, in the financing of our preservation efforts that are going on right now, the modeling of our permanent financing for preservation projects, pretty much all of them rely heavily, ultimately, on the OHTC. So I wanted to bring you up to date recently on what's recently happened with our acquisition fund, which we've talked about previously in front of you. We currently have about $22 million in that fund. We have about another $8 million that is committed, and so we will soon be, within the next few months, up to a $30 million fund. To date, we have been able to close loans for 8 projects for about $13 million. We have a number of more projects in the pipeline that far exceed our ability to fund them at this point. That's been able to preserve about 287 units of housing around the state, and the projects have been very geographically diverse. But we need resources. This fund is just the first step. It is just an interim financing tool, and so we need the resources to make sure we can provide the permanent financing when these projects get their new federal contracts from HUD. And the OHTC is contemplated to play a major role with that, which is why this increase is important to us. So over the course of the next few years, as these projects roll out of this fund, we have the resources to continue the permanent preservation. Certainly, with this credit being utilized by the banks, there's some challenges caused by reduced demand for state credits in the banking community. But it also is going to be extremely important to have this resource available. As Rick mentioned, there's a long lead time with these projects. We need to know the resources are going to be there so we can plan for them and have an orderly progression of the projects through the financing process and cycle. And without the ability to know that we'll have the additional cap to make these loans down the road, it would really hamper our ability to reach the same number of projects. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your consideration and your time. I appreciate your support of the bill.
Thank you very much, and I want to tell you how much I appreciate the tone and tenor of your presentation today, because it really does focus on the revenue issues, and during this climate that we're in, I mean, that is unfortunately something we have to put first and foremost, going through a difficult session. So I will be the one to say that there are many other elements to these projects of a very human nature. These are actual families. I live across the street from one of these projects, the Watershed Project in Hillsdale, and it's just an amazing contributor to the community. Very well done. Serves a population that it's hard to see how they would be served otherwise. One of the things that helped us speed your requests along the way in the special session, in the supplemental session in 2008, was the idea of saving Section 208 vouchers and, you know, not losing those because of lack of housing. Have you been successful in preserving most of those, or have we, even with the funding that we've provided, have we lost some of those?
Madam Chair, in terms of the, and I'm assuming you're speaking specifically to the Section 8 vouchers that come with the projects that are attached to that, and we have been very successful in being able to do that. As mentioned, the 786 units, all of those had federal vouchers attached to them, and we have worked in collaboration with HUD, who administers this, and they've been very supportive of extending those contracts or renewing those contracts, I should say, for 20 years. So in all cases, to make these projects work, we have to have those contracts renewed, and have been very successful in doing so. I think, as I mentioned, in the 786 units, that's about $56.6 million of federal subsidies that will now stay in the state.
Great, thank you. And I apologize for saying Section 208. That's actually a section of the Clean Water Act. In my old environmental days, so you'll forgive me, I've had too many lives compressed into this one. So thank you for that. And
Madam Chair, I might just add to that. And again, I just used the case study of the 2008. Certainly, as I mentioned, there's another pipeline that we have that's in awaiting permanent financing, the 364 units that I had mentioned that also have federal subsidy. And then Bill also talked about what's in the interim pool. I think he said 247 units, and all of those, I believe, they all have the federal contracts on them as well. So, again, you know, in all cases, we would be preserving the federal contract.
I appreciate that. Thank you. That's quite an accomplishment. The other thing I wanted to ask is you do get funding from foundations, the Meyer Memorial Trust and the Collins Foundation, I see here on your handout. And are you continuing an active program to try to get charitable funding for this?
Yeah, absolutely we are. We're continuing. We are working with a number of foundations. We have applications in. We have a large application in with the MacArthur Foundation that has a national proposal out. We were one of 20 finalists. They'll be making a public national announcement on February 26th. So we're flagging that date for some good news then, hopefully. And then we've also been reaching out to the Ford Foundation, the National Ford Foundation, not the local Ford Foundation, as well as some others. So we're working to grow the fund on all levels, both with continuing to approach more banks. We have a handful of banks participating now. A few more have expressed interest and will be coming in. And then there's some others we're still reaching out to. And some have said, given the climate, they can't do it now, but they're hoping that maybe by 2010 they'll be able to come in. So if you remember, this is an issue where we have contracts that expire between now and 2013. So we have a number of years. We're going to have to address all those projects. And so far, we're batting a good average. We want to keep that average, but we'll continue to grow resources to do it.
Great. And we also have had a lot of developments at the federal level. We've got the bailouts that affect some banks. We've got the federal stimulus package that was just signed by the president yesterday. Seems like such a long time ago. Are any of these having any impact on your work?
Madam Chair, absolutely. The bill that has been signed by the president, we're estimating, and these are just estimates at the point. We're all, I think, as agencies, all trying to figure out specifically what it means in terms of dollar value. What we're seeing in terms of total money coming to the state as it relates to housing is about $97.5 million. Now, having said that, a majority of that is related to low-income weatherization dollars. I think approximately $40 million is what we're anticipating that would be administered through our community action agencies, but we do see some opportunities on home dollars that we get. These are federal resources for housing development, and they've been specifically targeted to help projects that have been held up related to the low-income housing tax credit, the federal tax credit, where projects are having trouble finding investors to invest in the credits, or perhaps they're not getting the prices that they had anticipated initially, which is creating gaps. And this money is targeted to get those projects moving. So we see that particular investment being very helpful in moving some of these projects that have stalled a little bit as it relates, and could be very, very beneficial to, you know, moving our agenda forward. I should also mention there's some other dollars that also come with the stimulus package. There's some money that's targeted for the neighborhood stabilization program. And this is specific to the foreclosures of homes around the states, where you have the opportunity to purchase those and provide those again for low-income housing opportunities. So that's the big portion of the stimulus that's coming to, at least we were projecting, coming to housing and community services. I'm sorry I keep talking too close to the microphone.
Oh, yeah, back off. You're getting frowns from the committee staff. Senator Hess.
Just kind of comment. Over the years when I've seen these increases come forward, you've never really needed the stimulus argument, really, until now, and I think it's a bona fide key argument here. I mean, not just in the leveraged money from the foundations and others, but I've driven past this Hillsdale development, and for a year it was just a beehive of traffic jams and activity, and there was a lot nearby. There probably was 100 pickups and vans there for more than a year working on this. So it really is a jobs stimulus, and you didn't need to call it a jobs bill. It might have been overreaching, but in some ways it is. And I that's a bona fide component of this bill.
Thank you. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reference to the 786 units of federally subsidized housing that was preserved, how do we know that, in fact, the alternative would have been the demise of that federally subsidized housing?
Thanks. I think so. A couple things about those. And first is that Oregon Housing Community Services staff is in pretty regular communication with the owners of these projects as they are approaching the end of their contract period. They've been very good about that proactive outreach to try and determine what that owner's ultimate objective is when that contract expires. There are some owners that are renewing, and they're staying in the program, and that's great. And then there are owners that are saying that, you know, they've run their course and they don't want to operate these properties anymore, so they put them up for sale. And so those 700-plus units are generally projects that have been transfers of ownerships from owners that wish to sell the projects and don't want to stay in the program anymore. These buyers did renew the contracts for a 20-year period of time and locked in that affordability for that period. There's a variety of different ways that these projects could flow out the back end and eventually not be affordable, but in this case, we were able to secure them all.
And Madam Chair, Senator Morris, I might add to that. When we do these projects and when we go through permanent financing, there is a extensive rehab that is put into them. And so obviously these are projects that have been around for 30 years. And I think part of your question's concern is, is it something worth preserving? And I think that, two things, and Bill alluded to, we've been monitoring these things for the last 30 years. And we have extensive requirements for our owners to make sure that the projects are maintained physically and that they're in decent shape. And I'm proud to say that, our portfolio is a good one. We get good ratings as it relates to the HUD contract that we have. So I feel like we do a good job of managing these properties from a compliance standpoint. But we also recognize that these have now last another 20 to 30 years. So we are working to make sure that in the new financing plan that there is enough rehab to bring that back up to the quality that most housing is today.
Senator Rosenbaum.
So thank you, Madam Chair, and it's good to see you again. And this is what I would describe as a modest proposal, which only doesn't look modest in light of the crisis that we're facing. So I wonder if you have anything you want to say about the growing, what I would assume is enormously growing backlog of people who would qualify for subsidized housing. I can only imagine with what's happening with our unemployment that we have a staggering unmet need.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosema, in terms of the need, it's unheard of right now. I mean, I'm just speaking to the Department of Human Services recently, the amount of people that are coming through their offices at this point searching for support, I mean, it's growing daily. So in terms of, we don't administer the voucher, as many people call the sticky voucher programs, but we work through the housing authorities, so I can't speak specifically to that. But all of our projects right now, I mean, they're 100% occupied. So there is huge amounts and huge needs for all these Section 8 projects, and if they go away, they're fully occupied. These people are not going to have a place to go. Again, we look at just our, and I know the last session we just focused on our portfolio of Section 8, and that was nearly 5,000 units, 5,000 people, families, seniors, et cetera, that would be without housing if this project's not preserved. That's just talking about the Section 8. There's also the rural development projects that are in place, too, that are expiring across the state. So there's a huge need, especially now in the economy that we're in, and certainly these projects are necessary to be maintained and stayed in place.
Just a word on the tax credits. And, we have a number of tax credit programs that we operate through this committee, or we authorize through this committee. And there's no pass-through on this tax credit. The banks actually have the credit and don't transfer it. How's that working? Do you see that in the medium term and long term as being sustainable? Is that going to be a problem in the future? I mean, it's a very desirable thing, but do you see any? You did mention that there's a little less demand. I just wanted you to elaborate on that a little bit.
It is a challenge at this moment in time, probably greater than it's been in the past, because the profitability levels at some of the banks that have traditionally used some of these credits is down. There also is an increase of different types of credit opportunities that investors can pursue that would compete with this credit for some kind of an investment. We certainly know of banks that have told us that, you know, at this point, you know, because they've made significant investments maybe in an energy credit, they don't have a lot of appetite left for this particular credit at this point in time. But all of them have been very committed to our program, at least, and have said that they are hopeful that as some of these other credits run off, because they're limited duration, and as their profitability returns to more historic levels, that they will be very supportive of continuing to look at these credits. So long term, I'm pretty optimistic that this will continue to be a good vehicle. I think, you know, there will be fewer opportunities in the short run, but I think there are definite opportunities for it to be used by banks even in the short term.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Let's take our last two witnesses here, Jim Moorfield and Janet Bird.
I'm up first. My name is Jim Moorfield. I'm executive director with Willamette Neighborhood Housing Services. We're a private nonprofit community development organization serving Benton and Linn counties. Some of the projects that we have that we're working on include a preservation project of two properties, 51 units total in Sweet Home. We were just awarded financing for this tax credit. Is an important part of that financing. That's just like the preservation projects you've been hearing about. We're watching another preservation property in Corvallis that maybe a year from now we'll be bringing forward, depending on what the owner does. He's still trying to figure out what he's going to do at the end of his contract period, but that houses 62 people, senior and people with disabilities in Corvallis. But the project I want to tell you about today is actually a new construction example, because I wanted to describe something we're working on and actively right now that illustrates how the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit is used. And I want to bring it sort of down to the street level, if you will, by using an example of a single mother with children who needs a three-bedroom apartment to rent in Corvallis. And she works as a nursing aide at one of our area hospitals. She earns on the average, or people in her profession earn on the average in the Lynn-Benton area, about a little over $23,000 a year. So when you do the calculations, an affordable rent to this mom and her kids is going to be $582 a month, including utilities. Now compare what she can afford, that $528 a month, to what a fair market rent, what HUD determines a fair market rent in Corvallis to be, $1,000 for a three-bedroom unit, $1,110 a month. So that's a big gap to fill, and that's why nonprofits like us exist all over the state of Oregon. In Corvallis, we're working on this problem by developing a project called Alexander Court, 32 units of housing, right across the street from Lincoln School in South Corvallis, a K-8 public school, and right across the street from a primary health care clinic that serves low-income families. So it's a great location for families to be. We've got the land. We've got the design done. The city of Corvallis has committed $1 million in federal grant resources to this project, and they may be coming up with some more. And next week, we're submitting an application to the state of Oregon, to Oregon Housing and Community Services, for this project, and we'll see how it goes. Using the full range of sources that go into an affordable housing project, We can get that rent down to about, for a three-bedroom unit at this site, down to about $751 a month. Now, that's a little ways from the $582 this family can afford. And that's where the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Program comes in. Because in partnership with our lender, we get to do three things. One is that we get a significant amount of private loan capital to help finance the project. Two is we get a lower interest rate. And three is that we pass through that lower debt service in the form of lower rents. And we can get what would otherwise be a $751 a month rent down to about $650. Now, that's still on the high side for this family, but it's a whole lot more affordable than $1,100 would be, or even $751. Most importantly, it's easy to imagine what kind of difference that extra $101 a month would make to a family when she gets to keep that for herself and her kids at the beginning of every month to clothe and to feed and take care of her family. And I used a nursing aide as an example in this illustration, but this story in our area could also be about short order cook, a janitor, a receptionist, a teacher assistant, a child care worker, or a retail salesperson, because all of them earn wages similar to the nursing aides, and all of them need the kind of assistance that we can provide with this tax credit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Janet.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Janet Bird, and I'm the Executive Director of Neighborhood Partnerships, and I'm the convener of the Housing Alliance. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about Senate Bill 199. The more than 65 member organizations of the Housing Alliance support the expansion of the cap on the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit as proposed in SB 199. As you've heard, and many of you have heard several sessions in a row, this is one of the most effective and efficient tools available to developers who want to keep the rents that their hardworking and special needs residents pay as low as possible. It's been widely used in the development of multifamily housing in all corners of the state. Expansions in 07 and 08 have been critical to the success of our work in preserving existing affordable housing, as you've heard, particularly those with rent subsidy contracts, and then was also expanded to work with resident purchases of manufactured home parks. Preserving these homes, which serve some of our most vulnerable low-income neighbors, has been the right policy choice in both human and financial terms. Even though development of affordable housing and use of the OHTC has stalled, we believe that this increase on the current cap will help developers and housing and community services as they plan for future developments. As you heard Mr. Krager say, our assumption is that this would have very little revenue or fiscal impact in this biennium, but what it would allow is for housing and community services to open up that pipeline again of development and get folks planning for the future. Because the development pipeline for people like Jim is so lengthy, the time periods required are so lengthy to plan, to acquire land, et cetera, it's nice to be able to have the predictability that the increase in the cap would allow. I want to thank you very much for your support in previous sessions, and thank you for considering this session. We do understand that you have a number of very difficult choices facing you, and we urge you to help us continue this successful partnership between lenders and developers. I also want to say Tim Martinez is here from the Oregon Bankers Association. He's not planning to speak today, but he did want me to acknowledge the support of the bankers for this tool as well. They also value the partnership that it allows and the efficiency of it. So thank you very much, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Morris.
Not a question, just a comment. I'm delighted that Jim did come today. Very important part of our community. Very successful, well supported, well connected in the community, and a very worthwhile program. So thank you for coming.
Good
thank
day.
You.
Boy, we're really giving you guys a grilling.
Well, I do have a question for Mr. Martinez, though.
should we drag him up here? All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Martinez.
I know I should have left
early. But we're tired of being nice to people.
So.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tim Martinez, Oregon Bankers Association, and, you know, by this time of the year, I'm already used to being beat up in committee, so go right ahead.
Senator Morris.
And maybe I should have asked a question earlier, but I did notice that there were only two banks on the list that apparently participated, Wells Fargo being one and Bank of America being the other. And I'm wondering, where are the rest of the banks in this scenario?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, I'm not sure what list you're talking about. I do know that Mr. Van Vliet might be a better person to answer this question, but there are certainly a lot more than two banks that participate through NOAA in this program.
Mr. Van Vliet, why don't you come on up and elaborate on that, if you would. Thank you. I saw that same thing and meant to ask it at the time.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bill Van Vliet, the executive director at NOAA. So there's two things. One is the list that you had shows the two banks. That is strictly participation in our new preservation fund. It's not the limit of the banks that are interested in using the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit. There's banks all over the state that do use that credit and are presently using it. And we have 22 of those banks that fund our program, and they all accept and use the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit as a part of that program. So it's well subscribed, it's well used throughout the banking community of the state of Oregon, which has been very supportive of this, not only this credit, but this affordable housing funding program that we have. On the Just to answer your question on the preservation fund, those were just the first two that have signed up. We have more in the works, so there will be more banks participating in that fund before we're done. You can imagine right now is not the best time to be getting new banks to sign up with significant real estate financing commitments, but they are interested, and we will be adding more as time goes on. The fund is still very young.
Thank you. And also, Mr. Martinez, did you have anything to add on the discussion of the tax credits and the long-term outlook for the use of tax credits?
Madam Chair, member of the committee, I think the folks that have testified before me did a good job. I mean, it is a tough time right now. We all understand that. But we certainly hope and believe that over time there will be a resurgence in the use of this tax credit.
Thank you. And just help us understand what, I mean, I know the banks are good members of the community and like to be involved in this, but what else is in it for the banks to participate in this program? Since the pass-throughs go to the tenants, do the banks get any, just describe for us the actual benefits
okay,
that the banks get.
Madam Chair, I think you alluded to it in your first comments about banks wanting to be involved in their communities and helping their communities. So there is the benefit. I mean, the more folks that can be in homes, you know, start down that path, someday hopefully buying their own home, they're going to be a more productive member of their local community. So that's very important to banks because that's, you know, where we're going to draw our customer base over time. NOAA was started, I believe, in the mid-'80s. And it was folks in this building who really urged the banking industry to look at a program like this, and we took that to heart. Several Portland legislators were very instrumental in getting it started. We think it is a great organization. As you know, you served as a public member for a while on the loan committee. I'm told you were the best public member that ever served.
I think deadbeat was the word.
So, you know, it is a very good program. Banks are very interested in participating. You know, we have about 45 banks, so almost half of them are involved in this program through NOAA. And I just think it's, you know, helping back to the community. And, of course, I probably need to add that I'm sure there is some CRA benefit as well. That is obviously an interest to banks to make sure they're meeting their Community Reinvestment Act requirements.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee?
Madam Chair,
Senator Rosenbaum.
I think this is actually referenced in some of the testimony, but it sounds like modifications to the TARP requirements in expending the remaining TARP funds, which I think are really in flux right now, could encourage more lending institutions in a pretty serious way to participate in various programs. And so I don't know whether I didn't really get whether what you're saying is that those modifications could influence participation in our state program, but is that the case?
Let me take a stab at that first,
yeah.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum. Believe it or not, in Oregon, and we haven't done a very good job telling the story, but believe it or not, there were more loans made overall by banks in Oregon in 2008 than were made in 2007. So we are a little frustrated in the general media perception that banks aren't lending. I can bring in as many bankers as you want into your office that'll tell you they're open for business and they're trying to make quality loans. I mean, the days are over where you could fog a mirror and get a loan. Now you actually have to show that there's a repayment capability, and certainly, you know, folks overreached both as lenders and as borrowers. But I can't give you an exact answer on what's all in TARP. I mean, it changes, it seems, on a daily basis. But I would just tell you very strongly that banks in Oregon are out there making loans. And if you hear from constituents that are having trouble, I would strongly encourage you to contact me, and I'd certainly take a look at it for you.
Thank you. You want to follow up?
No.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else want to speak on this bill while we're all here? Any other comments from the committees? Again, a reminder, on Friday we have the joint meeting on the House floor at 10 o'clock for the revenue forecast, and we will reconvene in this room at 10:45 to ask questions of the forecasters. Paul, anything I missed? Anything to add?
No, I'd like to add one thing about Senate Bill 199, just to remind you that, as your tax expenditure report said, there's no clear policy statement. You recall what our revenue impact statement process is. If the committee does take action on this bill and sends it to the floor, we'll have to fill that in, and your revenue impact statement. I think you've got good information in terms of the expected outcomes, but in terms of a policy statement from committee. So that may be something to think about as we look at this bill again.
Terrific. Thank you for bringing that up. Okay, any other comments, importunings, sarcastic remarks? Okay, we are adjourned.